2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. I remember a year ago when everybody was buying crypto.
Oh, Scotty. Why? Yeah, well, yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm currently locked in, and holy cow, we're on a free fall, bud.
Yeah, I mean, even the Dow's been awful over the last 3-4 weeks.
Let me tell you, this thing ain't going to the moon.
No, there's no moon to be had. Nope.
I feel like the floor is falling out, and I'm heading to the middle of the earth.
You know, everything I put in there, I'm just like, you know what? At this point, just I'm just going to leave it.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm leaving it.
Yeah.
But it's...
Let's just say I'm not buying the dip, that's for sure.
I've got one-third left of what I put in.
Yeah, it's about the same.
You know? One-third. That, and it's not like we bought at the wrong time, because at one point, I had almost tripled my money in crypto.
Yeah.
But now I'm sitting at like one-third of what I put in.
Yep. That's why all you kids out there, don't make these decisions all willy-nilly. Do your research.
Well, the worst part is, when I was way up, when I'd made a lot of money on the crypto,
I
went to pull it out. I've got this Uphold. It's the app that I use.
Yeah.
And I went to pull out the money. And it was like, this is a very difficult process. You're going to have to follow these. And I'm like, no, I need it now. And it's like, you're going to have to wait 2 business months. It's like, I've never even heard of 2 business months. I want my money now. The floor completely fell out of this thing after 2 months. Give me my money. Give me back my money.
Think of Mel Gibson. Jeez. Give me back my crypto.
It's so horrible.
Yeah, that Doge, that did not end well. All right. By the way, the Dow down 489 today, too. Jeez. Don't look at that 401k, folks. Just,
ignore it.
Ignore it. Don't you don't
and
need
leave
to be
it.
Paying attention to that.
Leave it.
Yeah. Don't mess around with it, but yeah. All right, Kurt Helin, kind enough to join us here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Kurt, how are you?
Hey, Kurt.
Good. So what's doing worse, my 401k or the Warriors last night?
Oh, see, I was going to say, what do you buy more in, Dogecoin or the Lakers right now? But you beat me to it. That was better.
No, that's pretty good. And I'm not sure I want a piece of either of them right now.
Hey, what happened to Golden State last night, Kurt?
Look, two things. That was the best Memphis... The better version of the best Memphis has played this series. I mean, outside of Ja Morant had fantastic games, but we hadn't really seen a good Desmond Bane game, and we did last night. He looked like he was back and healthy. Jaren Jackson Jr. had a really good game. Steven Adams, they kind of figured out how to use him and free up Jaren. And like Tyus Jones, who'd been off all series, like everything kind of rolled their way. And they're such a team that when they play with such emotion that when things are really rolling for them, it just snowballs. On the flip side, the Warriors are playing with their food, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just. I expect them to come back, and we'll see a very different Warriors team in Game 6. I think they're a little cocky, they're a little confident, and they're like, yeah, we got this.
Well, and I said this earlier, had that been like a 4-point game that Memphis eked out and really you had to flex in the fourth quarter to get there, I might think a little differently, but it was such a blowout and such an anomaly that I have a hard time even taking it serious.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the Warriors took it seriously, but you always run a risk giving a young team confidence. Like, I think that's your concern. Look, you're going up. If you're the Warriors, you should win this, but they're the more athletic team. Like, and you just gave them a bunch of confidence. That's a concern. Let's put it this way. You definitely don't want a Game 7.
No, there's no doubt about that.
So last night with the Milwaukee and Boston, is that an indicator? Milwaukee goes and gets a road win. Is that an indicator they're figuring things out with Middleton just a little bit? And do you now come back to Milwaukee and end that thing?
Yeah, I think they've got to. That is such an even series. My temptation is to say, well, they got it, right? Like, now they're going to go home in game six, and this is where champions close it out, and they're playing like champions. But man, that whole series is just back and forth, tight games, little things deciding it. I was really impressed with the Bucks last night, though, that, I mean, never lost touch with them. There were points where it looked like during the game, you're like, oh, here it comes. Here comes where they get just... The Celtics run away from them. They never quite were able to do that. They were able to hang close. And then in crunch time, you know, Giannis is knocking down a three. Jrue Holiday is making plays. Portis is getting rebounds. Like, everything they need to happen, they played like... That's what championship teams do, right? That's what championship teams look like. They find a way to win those kind of games. And it's still a tight series. If you told me Boston eked out two more wins, I wouldn't be shocked. But I just... The way the Bucks are playing now, I'm kind of with you. I just think they're playing with such confidence, and they figured out how to win this series without Middleton, which is something I didn't think they could do. They've been, I don't know, this has been the best second-round series, guys. That's been really well-played basketball. Mm-hmm.
Kurt Helin joining us, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. When you look across the board and you look at these other series that are going on right now, and it's just so back and forth, home court seems to matter a little bit more in some of these series than maybe we would have thought going forward. But overall, though, from an NBA perspective, we can't ask for much better from a second round than what we're getting right now.
No, it's been a really entertaining, like even the series we thought was over, like the one that was 3-1, we're like, all right, Warriors are going to close this out. Nah, it ends up being an entertaining game, right? I think there's just a lot of that. I think there's this was a wide open year, and I think we're seeing that in this round where you've got even series where you think you know how it's going to end now. It's still tight. It's still really even.
Do either of these series end tonight?
I think Phoenix can close it out tonight. That's been a weird series where the role players have just been... I mean, role players are always a little better at home, but it's been, like, really dramatic in this series. But I think the Suns figured some stuff out. They were able to make Doncic work for his points and then hold everybody else in check. I think they can do that again. I don't think that they're going to... mess around with this. I kind of like Phoenix, not a lot. I think that anytime you're going up against what Luka can do, it's a risk, but I kind of like them. I got a feeling Philly's just got too much fight in them. Embiid's going to step up. I think they get a little more out of, like, I don't expect much out of Harden, but I expect that they'll have enough from Embiid and Maxi and maybe another good Tobias Harris game. I just think that it's really going to be really tough to close out Philly at home. In a game six. And that said, if I'm the Heat and I can get up about 12 or 15 on them in the first quarter, early second quarter, and it gets nervous in that building, things could change.
Kurt Helin joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. So, Kurt, when you a lot of conversation about the Suns, is Chris Paul... Now, we've seen really good Chris Paul, and then we've seen traditionally playoff Chris Paul over the last little stretch. How surprised were you that – I know your family members are a little bit – you know, look, that's important. And if you feel like somebody's disrespecting, got your hands on your family, you're going to react poorly. But that was not a good look for Chris Paul the other night, talking to a 17-year-old about trying to find him after the game. I mean, the NBA can't be pleased with that.
No, that whole situation went poorly for them. Well, we've talked before, like, they're struggling with how to handle fan interaction right now because it's been, especially post-pandemic, there's just been more fans both willing to cross the line, and also I think we just keep seeing more and more of it. I don't think this is really the case in, like, Utah, but some markets, hey, man, I'm courtside with my buddy. He's going to film this, and we're going to create a viral moment by getting the GOAT of, you know, whatever, name your player. I don't know how the league has got to find a way to, you can't just find the players for this. They're going to have to find a way to balance this a little better. And I'm not sure what the easy solution, or if there were an easy solution, they'd have it. I'm not sure what the solution there is. But Chris Paul has got to be better. I think we will be tonight. I just, he's usually able to raise his game up. But yeah, he's 37, man. He's not young, so there might be some off nights.
Kurt, you've been doing this a long time, and you've been in a lot of arenas, and you've witnessed a lot of fan player interaction. Is it really worse now than it was late 90s, early 2000s?
That's a good question. To be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think the players are a little more sensitive to it now, but I don't know that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's obviously you've got Malice in the Palace, and Lord knows what people were yelling at Rodman back in the day. But I don't know if it's worse or if the players are just not willing to tolerate it in a way they kind of ignored in the past. It's a great question. I have been at this a while, but you need to find somebody actually old and ask them.
Well done by you. Kurt Helin here on The Zone. All right, so when you look at the Jazz and where they're at right now, and obviously it's a hot button here, but frankly, there's really nothing that can be done from a Jazz perspective, maybe outside of Quinn Snyder until draft night, correct?
Yeah, not until you get right around the draft, there's not going to be any real movement. Right. If there's a coaching change, whether it's Quinn wanting to go or whatever, you got to do that. You've got to have your coach in place by the draft. The coach should have some input on you know, who you're bringing in and who he wants to coach. And that's not always going to mesh with the GM, but you at least want their input. So I think that would be the only thing. Aside that, in terms of whether you're making a big, bold trade or just something, you know, more around the edges, nothing really happens till the day or two before the draft at best, and maybe some stuff starts to switch then, but it's mostly draft night. There's a lot of conversations and a lot of rumors between now and then, but even a lot of the stuff that gets executed that night, like, or gets announced that night, can't be executed because you can't make the trade until July 1st. So.
Yeah.
Kurt, if you were in charge of this team, and I get it, you've got luxury tax implications, and there's a lot of different financial things that you have to look at, but if you were in charge of this team, would you run it back with Quinn, Rudy, and Donovan?
I would explore trading Rudy, and I don't know if anything comes of that. I think that's part of why you're hearing – there's two reasons I think you're hearing the run-it-back stuff now with a little bit, and you got that from Jake Fisher the other day at the Bleacher, and kind of a big story. A, if everybody knows you're trying to trade Rudy, which, you know, everybody does, but, like, you need some leverage. You need some, we'll run it back. Like, you've got to say that anyway, just to create the perception that you will run it back. The other part of that, though, is that we've talked about this, I'm just not sure the offers for Rudy, or if you're trying to move Mike Conley or, you know, Royce O'Neal or whoever it is, if the offers aren't good, you're better off running it back. You're better off doing it and seeing what you can get maybe early next season, or not early next, but sometimes there's moves during training camp and things shake out differently or closer to the trade deadline. You're better at doing that than taking pennies on the dollar because you've got to do something. Whenever you do something, I don't know, in life, whenever I've got to do something here, and you just go do something, it tends not to be the wise move.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point there, too. And there's a feeling, and this happens to every professional team that maybe doesn't perform to the level that I think a lot of people expected, was the moment of, like, well, we got to do something. Something has to change. Well, does it? And are you sure that if you change it, it's going to be better because of that change? Like, I think everybody, and that's why I'm glad that we have maybe like a month and a half to kind of cool down here a little bit, because I think some of the things people are throwing out don't necessarily make the Jazz better.
Yeah, and that's the real challenge for the front office is the first offers you're going to get, the people that are picking up the phone right now are vultures trying to pick the carcass, right? Like, yeah. they're like, hey, let's see if we can get Rudy Gobert for a rack of shoot around basketballs, I think that that's one of the things was interesting in that report. They want to make sure they have multiple All-Stars when the All-Star game comes to Utah next year. I mean, A, yes, you absolutely would like to have multiple. That's a good look. But beyond just that part of it, that's the, hey, if you want Rudy, we're not taking back your garbage. Like, we want all-star level players. We want people who genuinely make this team better. We're not giving up a three-time defensive player of the year for your bad contracts.
Kurt, where are we at right now with Damian Lillard in Portland?
The plan there publicly is still to try to look. They just went with Joe Cronin full time as the GM up there and gave him. They took the interim tag off of him, and they're going to try to rebuild on the fly around him. Much as we've discussed with Utah trying to do something along those lines, it's really hard. It is a really hard thing to pull off in the best of times, and I'm not sure what players are out there that can move, but that's kind of the plan right now is to, hey, we're going to go after Jeremy Grant, and maybe we can go after Zach LaVine, and we're going to go after some star players and try to build this really quickly around Damian. I'm just curious how patient he's going to be. Right now he's all in, but if we get to mid-July and they haven't done anything, then what happens? Like, or done anything meaningful? How patient is he going to be? He's not getting younger. Is he willing to wait this out? Does he want to stay there that badly, and would he go through another year, or is he just going to get frustrated? Not to compare the two, but to kind of go James Harden or Jimmy Butler and go, that's it, I'm out, you know, and get me out of here. I'm not sure he's there yet, but I don't know how far off that is.
Well, and it's also, the offers for his services are going to be through the roof coming the offseason, too. Do you anticipate this offseason could get a little crazy with, do you assume Kyrie's back in Brooklyn? Because it seemed like their GM was a little noncommittal on that, but does he end up back there or does he in the open market, too?
I've got a feeling he's back there because Kevin Durant wants him back there, but I think that was Mark sending a message, hey, first off, I don't know how much I want to max out Kyrie, especially for that long. Same with James Harden, for that matter. But I don't know that they have a choice. Like, Kyrie's still Kyrie. He's still the best handles in the league and a guy I would like to have in key moments if we've got the pieces around him. They've got to get healthy, and they've got to find a way to build up some depth on that roster. But I'd be surprised if he moves, but I think you're going to see some big trades, and Lillard is a possibility. Obviously, you have a lot of eyes on Utah. The free agent market isn't that thrilling unless you really like James Harden or you think you – I don't know how comfortable, frankly, I would be maxing out Zach LaVine. I'd probably do it if I'm Chicago, but – is he a max player? Is he like a foundational guy?
Yeah, I have a hard time with that, for sure.
Yeah. So I think you're going to, but because that's the free agent market, it's pretty thin, I think you're going to see trades. I think you're going to see some, if you're a team looking to make a blockbuster move, it's more likely going to be via trade. So I think we're going to see that after either around the draft or particularly early July, you're going to see some big moves.
Well, if I'm the GM out there, I also, if I'm Sean Marks, I flex a little bit too, because I'm not a big fan of him in the postseason. Like, I'm going to be back and me and Kevin are going to build this team together and really make some tough decisions. I'm like, hey, man, no. I mean, I understand the players still have a ton of power, but if I'm the GM of that team, I just out of a pride standpoint, I'm not thrilled with that statement.
No, and especially like, I liked his point. Like, there's some accountability. How fun was this team under Kenny Atkinson when it was, Jarrett Allen and Spencer Dinwiddie and Joe Harris, and they were just grinding out wins and making the eighth seed, and they built this hard work culture that was selfless, and it got flipped on its head. I mean, Marks was right talking about, like, we've got to get back to what got us here and made, frankly, he didn't put it this way, but what made Durant and Irving want to join this team. Like, we have to get back to that, and that starts with accountability and somebody holding Kyrie Irving's feet to the fire. And, frankly, that kind of has to be Kevin.
Did they get things right with the MVP, Nikola Jokic?
I think so. But, I mean, to me, you did. And I think the timing ends up really poor, doesn't it? Like, and I don't know what the league could have done about it. And I, by the way, loved the video of him getting the video, like, jumping off the cow plow to get the thing in Serbia. but it, I mean, this happened the year Dirk Nowitzki won it, and then they'd gotten eliminated by the We Believe Warriors. It's a little awkward to have Embiid and Giannis playing like brilliant basketball and showing all this grit and toughness and doing all those things in the playoffs while the guy who just won the MVP is like, you know, back in Europe. It's
it's
an awkward look. Mm-hmm. And that said, for a regular season award, I voted for Jokic, but any one of those three was reasonable. I think I had all three of them on top of my ballot over different points over the final month, and it was the toughest MVP vote I've had. It was really coming down to you had to really think about what you value in an MVP and how you're dividing these guys up, because there were legitimate cases for all three of them, and frankly, not a terrible case for Booker or Tatum or Doncic either. But yeah.
Well, Kurt, we appreciate your time as always. Always good catching up with you. Let's do it again next week.
I look forward to it, guys. Take care, man.
Thanks, Kurt.
Kurt Helin, NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com, right here on the Zone Sports Network. All right, Andrew Reinhart's with us once again, right here on the Zone. Oh, well, we'll get Andrew here in a second. I like Kurt's always got some great insight there too, and I think that because the season ended the way it did for the Jazz, everybody's like, trade this guy, get rid of this guy, blah 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 blah. And I think it's cool. Everybody's like, hey, look, there's nothing you can do until really officially July 1st anyway.
Yeah.
So let's just be cool for a second.
Yeah, calmer heads are starting to prevail a little bit, but there are some teams that are in some really interesting situations. I brought up Portland with Damian Lillard. What do you do with that guy? When we were going through top 10 players in the league with David Locke yesterday or Tuesday, did we mention Damian Lillard?
We did not.
So Damian is just floating in this obscure area right now. And Portland's unable to do anything with him. But Damian's not the only one that's going to be in that obscure area. I think that Luka Doncic could float around in that area for a little while. I think that Nikola Jokic could float around in that area for a little bit. And until the right place gets them where, I don't know whether you unbuckle the belt and you allow the spending to just flow out and you say, hey, whatever luxury tax and repeater we got to pay, we'll pay it, but we're going to get a championship with Luka. Or we're going to get a championship with Nikola. Or we're going to get a championship with Damian. It's just weird because there are teams that have a top 10 player in the league. And they can't get over the hump. And I look at guys like Damian Lillard, I'm like, move everybody and bring Damian in and then do what you can around Damian, because he's a top 10 player that wouldn't be looked at as a top 10 player right now because nobody's done anything around him.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I think a different set of, a new scenery for him would be
very good, right?
A lot of fun to watch. All right, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Now Andrew Reinhart's with us from Wasatch Medical. And Andrew, there's guys out there that may think, you know what, I just need to do a couple sit-ups, cut out the carbs, not eat the pizza anymore, and things are going to go back to how it was in my 20s in the bedroom. That's not necessarily the case if you're struggling with ED.
Well, not necessarily, and probably not going to happen, unfortunately. Men take the pill, it seems like, for a lifetime. And even then, ED can get worse as we age, as we live the American lifestyle. But I believe we are on the front end here of a major medical breakthrough, the acoustic wave therapy that we use here at Wasatch Medical. And keep in mind, it's the two most advanced versions now for every category of ED. It opens up and regrows blood vessels with pressure waves. Think of what we do to a muscle in the gym. Break it down a little bit, agitate it, build it up stronger, even though you won't feel it. That is what the pressure waves are doing to the blood vessels. So we end up with neovascularization, basically more blood vessels, healthier circulation. That is a great thing for life in the bedroom. And my favorite part, no pills and no side effects.
And it all starts with that free assessment, too. You call 801-901-8000, and you're going to be able to find out exactly what's going on.
We believe in delivering a lot of value. There's no obligation to do treatments. You may come in, go through the assessment, decide to hold off. That's okay. But call us now. We'll set you up with the doctor, either St. George or Murray. The exam, the assessment, the ultrasound is free. The gift that has been enhanced produces powerful and pretty much immediate results in the bedroom. and testosterone, all no charge.
801-901-8000. You call right now, right here on the Zone Sports Network.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, brought to you by Zero Res, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network. All right, so I saved this. I had this in the good, but Lloyd's not here. This is for Lloyd. Because all the quarterback issues in Las Vegas have now been resolved. The Raiders have found their man. I know they gave Derek Carr a ton of money, but the New England Patriots have finalized a trade for Jarrett Stidham, and they have the Patriots have sent him to the Raiders. Jarrett Stidham, at some point, is going to step out on that field for Derek Carr, who's ever is either hurt or ineffective, and he's going to lead the Raiders to big victories this year.
Don't say that. Jarrett Stidham?
Jarrett Stidham.
What do we know about him?
That
he's traded to the Raiders?
Well, apparently a lot of people thought he was going to be the man in New England when Tom Brady retired, but it didn't quite work out for him. And then they got the I forget the guy's name, that they drafted from Alabama. Mac Jones, is that who it is?
Yeah.
And ended up having a nice year.
Yeah.
And so now Stidham's just fit, you know, just around doing nothing. And so they're like, all right, let's bring him to Vegas because Derek Carr stinks. Maybe Stidham can be better. This would be a lot more fun if Lloyd was here losing his mind right now.
What if, I hope right now, I hope that he's walking into the practice facility and they're like, Stidham, this is an open competition, man. I don't know if you've seen what's happened in the AFC West, but we're just going to face the facts. It's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And we're not sure if Carr is the vehicle that can drive us there.
So let's see. You got Mahomes, Herbert, Russell Wilson, Jarrett Stidham.
Oh, man. Las Vegas should just cancel this season.
Just shut it down. What are you guys even doing?
They don't even have a coach yet, do they? Or do they?
Can they just Who bounce knows? Them out of the division and bring in, like, the Rams or somebody good?
Oh, man. You could bounce them out of the division and bring in Alabama and probably boost the AFC West. Hey, Nick, 1 year deal with the NFL. Oh. We're going to be bumping the Las Vegas Raiders.
Saban's like, I already did that. I don't want to do that again.
I'm sorry, but the Vegas Raiders, they're not even going to make the postseason. They're going to suck.
All right, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. There's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
I don't even know why we pay attention to some of those national voices that just love to hear themselves yell. But Skip Bayless went on a rant about Rudy Gobert and his back and forth with Shaquille O'Neal. And I'm just going to tell you this. Skip Bayless took it way further than either Rudy or Shaq took it. Here's Skip losing his mind.
Rudy, you got to wake up, you got to wise up, and you got to shut up and give it up. Because you are nothing but a finesse defender. You are a fake tough guy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because I see too many drivers of the basketball who are 6'2". They just go right up into you.
And dunk on
and
you.
Dunk on you. I don't know what you're thinking. I know you got to sort of defend your honor on social media. But you are barking up the biggest, wrongest thing you've ever barked up on this one. Because I have told you, Mr. Sharp, Shaquille O'Neal, all those finals and all those games that I covered, he was the most dominating offensive force in the history of this league.
Oh, jeez. Like, I get it. And maybe, I don't know, man. Like, I always kind of take, you know, you take stock in what you're doing in your career. And I'm like, is this what we need to do with the show? Do we need to act like this? Like, I always thought, like, you know.
No, he's making a lot more money than
I know.
Us.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, I always thought that we build a show like, you know, we're genuine. We have hard opinions, but they're not just throwing stuff out to see what sticks and just
try not to falsify arguments.
Yeah, just like, you know, you and I don't be like, hey, here's a topic. I'm going to go this way. You go that way. All right, let's go. It's like, no, we don't do that. But I don't know, man. The dude's cashing some pretty good checks to just say garbage. Like, 6'2 dudes are dunking on him. Did the dudes won three out of the last four defensive players, or I guess three out of the last five defensive player of the year awards. Like, he's the best defender in the NBA and right up there in the conversation of the best defender in the history of the NBA. Like, you can, like, there's a lot of things you can go at Rudy about, but you can't say finesse defender and that 6'2 dudes are dunking him on all the time.
Well, let me tell you what bugs me about the finesse defender. The NBA has continued to evolve to the point where you have to defend differently than the old school defenders used to defend. You have to be a finesse defender because people are so quick to the whistles nowadays. Rudy Gobert isn't defending that way because he's soft or because he's weak. Rudy Gobert is defending that way so he can stay on the court and out of foul trouble. So when I hear Skip Bayless say stuff like that, I'm like, do you even think before you say something?
Yeah.
Do you put together a rational thought before you say something? He's a finesse defender? Show me a modern-day defender that is the hard-hack type defender. Because you won't find him. And when you're talking about being able to defend multiple positions, a 6'2 guard running up his chest, nobody trails and defends a 6'2 guard better than Rudy Gobert.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's just weird to me, and it's weird. Rudy continues to receive criticism that I think is unjust and unfair. First of all, I think that Shaq was having a little bit of fun and testing Rudy.
And Rudy was having a lot of fun with it, too.
And Rudy was having a little bit of fun and testing Shaq. And I thought both of them resolved it well. And then you got Skip Bayless who comes in and takes it way over the top. And then makes some incoherent statements in regards to Rudy Gobert's defensive ability. It's pretty absurd. And then Rudy Gobert, again, handles it extremely well. He sends out a tweet. And all it says is, these people are crazy, man. And then it's got the Skip Bayless comments right there. And then it's got an image of Shaq, an image of him, and then a dog that's laughing in his tweet. As Skip Bayless is making these stupid comments, the dog's laughing, and it's a picture of Shaq and Rudy kind of smiling. Like, and he just said, these people are crazy, man. He's handling it well.
Yeah.
I do wonder if on the inside, Rudy's just burning up, if it really hurts. He's like, Skip, why? Why would you say the 6'2 guards running up my chest nonstop to dunk on me? What are you talking about?
Yeah, you win three Defensive Player of the Year awards when that's happening. And look, but here's the thing. Like, I always feel guilty even being upset by this stuff because this is all he does. Like, he just throws crap out there and then he gets people riled up and then we all talk about it and then people go back, oh, what did he say today? You know, and so it's like a cycle that he's just trolling. That's all it is. He's just trolling. And it's hard not because you're like, wait a minute, what you're saying is wrong. Like, this is factually inaccurate and stupid and a really irresponsible thing to say. But he's like, I don't care. I'm making $20 million a year, so I'm going to say whatever I want and because people listen to me and watch me. And it's a little frustrating because I guess it's an easy way to go and an easy way to get your clicks and your downloads and your views. But, man, it just feels dirty. It just feels really dirty.
It does. And I'm not sitting here telling you that Rudy Gobert is going to win every battle against Shaquille. Shaquille's going to get, he's going to get the edge. He's going to have the edge, and he's going to get the win over Rudy.
Yes, like it, absolutely.
I think that Rudy probably knows that in his heart of hearts. Shaq definitely knows that in his heart of hearts. But one point Skip made that was somewhat coherent was saying that Shaq was the most dominant offensive player in the history of the game.
100%. 100% right.
You couldn't stop the bull in the China shop.
The only thing that slowed Shaq down was Shaq.
Yeah.
If Shaq was, if you took the work ethic of Kobe Bryant and put it into Shaquille O'Neal, Shaq would have 8 championships.
I agree. And probably 6 MVPs.
Yeah.
He's got one, right?
I'm not sure.
I think
one or two.
I think I know he had one for sure. Maybe he did pull out two, but probably would have had 4 or 5 at least, if it has stayed on.
And frankly, I think that's why, you know, there was a lot of issues between Shaq and Kobe because Kobe did have that work ethic and saw how great Shaq could be and realized he wasn't living up to his potential, and that's what drove Kobe nuts.
Yeah.
All right, there's your bad. Let's get to the ugly.
And, of course, the ugly.
Good, the Bad, the Ugly. Hands and Scotty right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Well, I just saw you tweet about this, and it's a bad look, man. You know, when you start getting in with the Saudi crews and then you start justifying things, it's never going to go well for you.
No.
And Greg Norman was asked about... kind of his involvement in this LIV golf event at the Centurion Club. It's going to be happening June 9th through the 11th. And he was asked about Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's alleged complicity in the 2008 killing of Khashoggi, an American citizen.
Journalist for what was it, the New York Times?
That's correct. And remember, the LIV golf is being financed by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund. So you're fully involved with the Saudi Arabians. And there have been some horrible human rights issues.
And if you don't know about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, I would say Google it at your own risk, because the details are horrid.
Yeah. So this is what Norman decided to go with, Scotty. He said, yeah, from what I heard and what you guys reported, just take ownership of what it is. Take ownership, no matter what it is. Look, we've all made mistakes.
And
you just want to learn from those mistakes. And how can you correct things going forward? Oh, no.
So a mistake is accidentally leaving a candy bar in your pocket when you're leaving a gas station, and then like and then you go back in and you pay for it, you know.
Yeah,
that's my bad. Or somebody goes, sir, hey, you got that little bag of peanuts, you gonna pay for that? And you're like, I'm really sorry about that. That's my mistake. That's a mistake. Murdering and beheading a journalist
inside the Saudi consulate,
that's not a mistake.
Oh my god,
that's bad. He also goes on to say the whole thing about Saudi Arabia and Khashoggi and human rights, I mean, talk about it, but also let's talk about the good that the country is doing in changing its culture.
So
I mean, if you got the scales here, I don't know if that quite balances out there, Greg.
So everybody needs to understand that this Saudi golf series is offering the richest purse in pro golf history. Total prize money for 8 events, $255 million for these 8 events. Norman announced an additional $2 billion investment from the fund to expand the series the next 3 years. So Saudi Arabia is going all in on this new professional tour that Phil Mickelson has already got himself canceled over. And then Greg Norman's dabbling in this thing. He's like, can we just learn from our mistakes? So this was the hard thing. This is the sad thing, too. So this reporter was set to be married to this woman named Hatice Singiz. And she has put out a response to Norman's comments. She said, it's so hurtful when Jamal's brutal killing is brushed off as a mistake, and that we should just move on. Would you say that if that was your loved one? How can we go forward when those who ordered the murder are still unpunished and continue to try to buy back their legitimacy?
Yeah.
this was the woman. She was engaged to this man that was murdered in the consulate. And she's listening to Greg Norman say, and I quote, just take ownership, no matter what it is. Look, we've all made mistakes, and you just want to learn from those mistakes and how you can correct them going forward. Now, the PGA Tour is going to do everything they can to muddy these waters and to make you look dumb if you're deciding, hey, I'm going to go and check out this new Saudi league and see if I can rep it and make some money in it. They're going to do everything they can to muddy the waters and make you look ugly. And I'm just telling you, you can't come out of this thing saying, well, I think that the Saudis, I think that they've really changed their ways. No, this happened, and it has not been addressed, and it has not been fixed. And it was only, what, 2018,
19, 18? Yeah, I think it was 18.
Yeah, wasn't that long ago?
No, it was not that long ago.
Let's see.
But hey, you know what? They've learned from it. They feel really bad about it.
You're right. October of 2018, Scotty.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm misreading this. It's hard to say we're taking it out of context because it feels pretty direct.
Nope. Nope. This is
he's basically saying we need to let bygones be bygones.
Come on. 3 years ago. Let's move on. Let's all move on. We all like golf, right? Let's all just sit around and watch some golf. It'll be fun.
What he needs to say is let's all admit it. It doesn't matter if this man was killed. There's a lot of money to be made.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's all it boils down to. I mean, that's what Phil's in exile over this, but that's what Phil said. He's like, look, there's a lot of money here. There's a lot of money. And yeah, what they're doing is some scary stuff over there in Saudi Arabia, but I'm getting a lot of money off this thing. So let's all be cool.
$225 million purse through 8 events. You know, what'd the Masters winner get? $2
million? In that range, yeah. 2 or 3. Not great. All right, Hans and Scotty. Whole World News next, 2 o'clock hour. We can revisit the conversation BYU and Utah State. The rivalry is dead. We'll talk more about it coming up at 2:05. Whole World News next, right here on The Zone.
We've got the whole world in our hands. You got the whole world.
Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network. By the way, I do not know what's going on here, but Jerry Jeudy, see, it's also probably a good idea that Lloyd is not here today, because Jerry Jeudy of the Broncos has been arrested and has been detained on unknown charges. So nobody knows why he's been arrested, but he has been arrested.
You sure?
Yeah.
Because I'm looking for. I just can't find the news on this.
I would like to know why. What's going on?
Well, it is Jerry Jeudy. This isn't Judge Jeudy.
Hey, by the way, I was reading a stat to my wife the other day about how Tom Brady, when he enters the broadcast booth, will be making $37 million a year.
Uh-huh.
And I put him, I said, that's that ranks him as the second highest broadcaster. That was the tweet that I read. It said broadcaster. And I'm like, take a guess who number one is. And she couldn't guess. I'm like, it's Judge Jeudy.
Oh, yeah.
Who is making $47 million a year for that show.
She's incredible.
And I tweeted out, and then Darren Revelle deleted it. But I did retweet it and then I had to delete it because he deleted his.
Yeah.
That I'm like, and Hans thinks she's worth every penny.
Every penny.
I love how
I adore her. I honestly wish that she would run for the president of the United States.
You would vote for her.
I would, not only would I vote for her, but I would continue voter fraud and make sure she gets in there.
You'd have all those Dominion voting machines all rigged, ready to go, huh?
You're darn right I would, man. There would be 500 dead people from Oklahoma voting for Judge Jeudy. I'm not even kidding you. I love her. And she could fix a lot of the world's problems just by simply saying, you're stupid. Stop it. That's stupid. She's the best.
40. That's why you got to get that syndication. Like, you get that syndication money and it's cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Do you think she could win it?
Well,
you think about how popular she is. You don't make $40 million for doing nothing.
I mean, normally
people love her.
I would say no, but, you know, there's a precedence of reality TV people becoming president of the United States.
Yes, there is.
You know?
Yes, there is.
There you go.
Not that she would ever run, but I think she
gets, I'd vote for her.
She gets so fed up with people. Oh, I'd vote for her so quick.
Although
I
she gets really angry at people, and having her finger right next to the red button,
yeah,
she's like, Mexico, I'm done with you. Bam,
you didn't pay the security deposit back. Bam, she gets so mad at renters and people that rent, because security deposits you just don't mess with them for the most part, unless people rip your carpet out and drill holes in the wall. You got to give the deposit back. And people are always like, there was a stain in the carpet. Are you kidding me? A stain? Are you stupid? Listen up, Charlie.
Oh, so she's sticking up for the renters.
Oh, not, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Oh, yeah. Good. Almost every time.
That's good. Are you pretty good about giving the security deposit back?
Oh, yeah. Mostly because I've watched Judge Judy, and it doesn't turn out good for the owners. So, yeah, I'm always like, yeah, hey, just try to make it as nice as you can. Scotty, we do have a whole world news. Imagine you're sleeping in your bed.
All right.
And you roll over and you throw your arm around what you would think is your wife,
mm-hmm.
or because you don't have a dog, or what you would think is your dog.
Your dog sleeping in your bed?
My dog?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gracie. Gracie sleeps at the foot of the bed. Buster sleeps in Mackie's room.
Okay.
But Gracie sleeps at the foot of the bed. She actually goes and visits Rock and Riley, and she just depends on who needs a little
extra TLC.
Emotional boost. She feels the flow of the home.
Does she really? If somebody's having a bad day, yes. She'll go in there and love them up?
100%.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's pretty incredible. So you throw your arm around it, and you start snuggling. Let's say you think you've got a dog, and you start snuggling your dog, and you're rubbing your nose, and you're like, watch out, Rover, you stinker. And then you come to find this.
And I said, hey, Julie, whose dog is this?
Jimmy Johnson opened his eyes and didn't recognize the dog sleeping in their bed.
Stayed rolled over on my side of the bed, and he goes, no, it's not our dog.
A strange canine quietly coming into their house uninvited.
One, how did the dog get in my house? Two, we have three dogs, Jupiter, Hollis, and Zeppelin, and they bark at anything. A squirrel in the yard, a rabbit, a bird, they bark, and there was no noise.
But as the pair checked out the dog, it seemed harmless. They think the back door must have been left open on accident. And it was through the power of social media that the pair was able to reunite Nala with their owner. This post on Facebook went viral, and sure enough, someone recognized Nala.
We got a Facebook message saying, hey, that's my dog. I'll be there in a few minutes. What's your address?
Johnson verified it was actually the woman's dog, asking for photos as proof.
And she sent me Christmas pictures and, all sorts of different photos with her dog.
She found out Nala traveled almost 2 miles, and the adventure eventually ended when Nala wanted some company.
As a matter of fact, I was still laying in the bed snuggling with Nala when her mom walked in the room.
And if it wasn't for the Facebook post, Julie and Jimmy say they would have had another dog as part of their family. Reporting in Polk County, Tennessee, Crystal Bowie, CBS 46 News.
Yeah, only in Tennessee.
Whose dog is this?
he's hugging it. He's snuggling in the bed. And he's like, what? Well, this isn't our dog. And by the way, it's a big, retriever. There are other three dogs that they own are big dogs. But it doesn't look like they're dogs that hang out in the bed, because they're like, one's like a pointer. The other one might be like a blue tick. I don't know. They're just not that kind of. And this is just a big old retriever.
I'd lose my mind.
In the bed.
I mean, come on. Honestly, it sounds like it's a pet hotel anyway. You got three of those dogs rolling around. What's another one? I don't know why you're so upset about it. Jeez, I bet that place is so messy. Smells.
It probably
awful.
Does, because they're big dogs. But it is kind of bizarre that a dog would go 2 miles and then be like, I'm kind of tired. I'm going to find a bed. It just wanders into a house.
Ooh, it's been a long day.
Kicks Steve halfway across the bed like, Steve, come on, man.
Cuddles
next into Becky. Finds a nice warm spot. Wets himself and off to sleep.
Oh, man. That sounds awful.